Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we look at the current processor market and ask the question, are more cores better? I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain.
Dennis, it's been a while since we've talked about processors. Well, at least not Ryzen processors.
Well, we kind of talked about Ryzen processors back when Threadripper 3 was on the market.
Threadripper, of course, that's gotten very popular, and especially lately with the news about the AMD Ryzen flagship trouncing Intel. Is that maybe too optimistic?
Yeah, it was. There was an announcement, what was it, for the 3990, which was the processor that we were talking about in a previous podcast that had not been released yet.
But that's not even a Threadripper.
No, that's the Threadripper one. That's the big one.
Oh, well, you know, it is the flagship, I suppose. But this week, Dennis...
The flagship consumer one, I think, is the one you're talking about.
There was a leak, Dennis.
A leak!
So I'm off of it. I don't even care about Ryzen anymore because there's a new Intel processor on the horizon, and I'm wondering what you know about it.
Is it the 10900?
10900. It's like 10900K. Well, I suppose it's a 10 series, I guess, is the right way of putting it.
10 series probably will cost $900,000.
And if I'm not mistaken, this one has a lake, right? Oh, Comet Lake S.
Comet Lake S. Super.
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 I like it because, you know, it's like the new video cards are super cards. Why not have the new processor be a super also?
Isn't that like imitation is the best form of...
But if you're going to really go that route, it's like a Type S, right? So it goes kind of back to the car market.
Oh, yeah.
The Sport edition.
Sport.
Of the 10 series.
I like it.
Processor.
Although, wasn't the RS better, though?
R-spec, S-spec. I don't even, isn't there a B-spec on a few of them?
Yeah, it was a Subaru, I think.
Subaru. B-spec, when you're not good enough for an A-spec. If you have a Subaru out there, I mean no disrespect. But moving on. So I found an article that supports this rumor from TechRadar, and they may be the source of this. So I'll link to this, or you can in the show notes. But we'll make sure you guys can see this article. But they say, and I'm going to semi-quote here, Intel's Core i9-10900K. And I still don't get it, but maybe that's right.
Yeah.
10900K sounds bad. Has had some benchmark leaks with the new 3DMark processor scores indicating that the 10-core flagship handily beats AMD's Ryzen 9 3900X.
Oh, and that processor has 12 cores.
Dun, dun, dun.
12 cores with their version of hyperthreading. And supposed to be faster because, you know, more cores is better.
More cores is better. Well, that's the whole Ryzen theme.
More cores. That's why Threadripper was a crazy processor everyone wanted, right?
Threadripper, though, it's got a cool name as opposed to Comet Lake. Now, at least Comet Lake S has kind of a little bit of style to it, but I feel like Intel needs more aggressive names. I mean, like, you know, Devil 13 or, or something. It's hard to get excited about something that's called a Comet Lake. S.
It's Halley's Comet Lake. Well, it comes around every 10 years.
Well, they all have lakes, and I get that they have these themes, but I feel like with the 10X, they had an opportunity to rebrand themselves with, like, I don't know, sharks or barracudas or...
Ooh, barracudas.
Know, at least leopards or something. I don't know.
Barracuda.
Something a little more aggressive than a lake.
So basically, the article is saying that this new Intel processor that has less cores and a higher clock speed is now offering... better CPU performance based off of the 3DMark benchmark.
But how is that possible? It has two less cores.
Two less cores.
Two.
Well, we know there is a little thing called overclocking, right?
Well, yeah, of course.
And what always wins?
Intel?
Well, yes. But no, we have a CPU frequency increase that always gives us better performance.
Well, that's true.
Now, if we have... clock for clock, core for core, like we have 8 cores on one CPU, 10 cores on another CPU, they're both running at 3 gigahertz. The 10-core one is going to offer better performance because it has more threads available to process what data is coming in.
Well, sure, that makes sense because the more the merrier.
But if we have that same 8-core running at 4 gigahertz and the 10-core running at 3 gigahertz, the 8-core is going to be faster. because it can process the data quicker.
Well, that sort of goes against the whole Threadripper theme, right? Because we're scaling as opposed to going for the top speed of our one or more cores.
Right. We have to also think about how benchmarks are run and how applications run.
Okay.
So we have a desktop application. We're surfing the web, right? And in the background, we might be downloading an email or something like that. So we have several threads coming in. The speed of your CPU, the frequency of it, will determine how fast those individual threads will get processed. As we start scaling, adding more and more load, like we're going to be surfing the web while rendering a 4K video, more cores is going to be better because most of the CPU is going to be dedicated to rendering your video, while a couple of cores are going to be able to download just the whatever's coming off the internet.
Well, that makes sense. And I suppose that's where the advantage of the Threadripper processor really comes through, because mm-hmm. we are finding, finally, the software is starting to catch up and utilize multi-core and multi-threaded application processing.
The situation I explained where we are rendering a video and surfing the web is relatively realistic. However, the frequency of that happening is not going to be every time you're surfing the web, you are rendering a video.
I can't help but be reminded of the old car stereo days when you could buy a amplifier, single channel, multi-channel, and it was difficult to determine what the wattage was because some would say peak watts, some would say RMS.
Power supplies in a computer are the kind of the same way. Before the 80 plus rating and before the sticker on the side that would talk about how many rails and how much power is going to each one, it was kind of the Wild West. So you would have some power supplies over 450 watts, but that was 450 peak. Really, it was only a 250 watt power supply. But it would support 450 on the peak sort of cycles whenever...
But that beautiful peak, just in case you need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not so dependable.
No. And the same with car stereo amplifiers. We had the cheap ones, like the Krakos would be...
Krako!
300 watts. Guys. But it was only a 50 watt. Because that was actually what it was rated for, but it would boost to 400 if you, you know, paired the channels down to mono and then had them run at 1 ohm and then it would last for 3 seconds.
My heavens. And I feel like that was sort of deceptive in an effort to get to folks that just didn't do their homework. And now I'm starting to wonder if that's why AMD is catching on. That can't be right, can it?
The Zen processor platform itself was designed to have as many cores as possible. And that was what made this land rush for Intel creating the Core i9-9900K, for instance, with 8 cores. Because before that, we had processors with 4 cores that ran actually very well. They overclocked very well. But then Ryzen comes along with 6 cores. Now all of a sudden, we have to compete.
Oh, maybe it's 199K, not 1099.
100K? 100K.
There's got to be a better way to pronounce that. I suppose that we'll find out when they officially announce this thing.
Yeah, or somebody in the show notes will go and say, hey, you guys are being dumb. It's actually this.
100, 900K.
Either way, that processor is a 10-core processor, and it's less expensive than the current one that's out and probably will be available.
Yeah, and we have had good experience getting those, which means that if this is the first i9 with the 10.9...
It's the second i9, actually.
Well, the first of the new generation, the Comet Lake S.
Comet Lake. Super smart.
That we can expect a whole range of these things, and this may not be the high-end one, for all we know. Mm-hmm. And if I'm looking at this leak correctly, I'm seeing that they're anticipating that it's a 3.7, 5.7 turbo.
Turbo, I think, yep.
Uh-huh. So that's pretty impressive. I'm sorry, did I say 3.7, 5.7? I meant 3.7, 5.1, which is a little bit more realistic. Mm-hmm. But we'll find out when we get there. But I'm also seeing some interesting things about this rumor, if the folks at TechRadar can be believed. This beautiful processor will have an all-core boost to 4.8 gigahertz.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Which is good. And, of course, the downside, maybe, of course, we're still speculating, is that this particular Intel product may use, worth a look maybe, a maximum load of 300 watts from your power supply, which is pretty dang impressive.
Yeah, so the 300-watt power draw, the last time that we had that I remember a system that pulled that was like the old slot one Xenons.
Oh, yeah.
Where you would have a 250-watt power supply powering the whole thing. Well, it wouldn't run unless you put a 300-watt PSU in there.
Now, hold on, Dennis. I don't think that's quite the same thing we're talking about.
No. This is not the same thing at all. I was talking about really old tech when 200 and 300-watt power supplies were kind of what you could get.
Well, for the longest time, we've been trashing, if you will, on the AMD because their video cards were very power hungry. Mm-hmm. Their processors were very power hungry. And now we have this potential new 10900K processor.
Yeah, the 10900K. Well, you were thinking it was 100,000 or something? 10,000?
10,900K?
Yeah.
10900, I think, sounds probably the best.
Yeah, I think we'll go with that.
Demanding 300 watts. Now, I'm imagining that that's nominal, so probably would peak even higher than that.
Yeah, that's going to be not necessarily the TDP, because that's how much power the CPU puts out, but how much is going to go into the VRM, which would explain why the X299X WaterForce has that 16-phase power supply.
Very nice.
To actually be able to power processors like this and be able to stay cool and not overheat and whatnot. But then we have, you know, the 300 watts to the CPU itself, and then we have the 500 watt recommendation for any video card that you have in the system, plus all the essentials. That's around probably 850, if my kind of math goes with the 80% rule.
Well, sure. Now, it hasn't been that long since we talked about gaming PC builds. Check our backlog here. A couple episodes back where we talked about nominal gaming PC builds. And we, I think, both agreed that we had upped our general recommendation to an 850-watt power supply.
Yeah, you really need to have that for a lot of the RTX cards and even the AMD ones, which are super power hungry.
Now, it's funny you mention that because I know we've had a couple of Threadrippers in the lab recently, and you've compared them to your current i9 processors.
Yeah, so the Threadripper 3... I've had a bit of a jaded history with my Threadripper 3.
Not an S?
No, not an S. It's an X, actually.
An X.
3960X. So I bought one when they first came out. It was kind of a fun thing with Newegg because they were out of stock. I set up for an alert, and the first time I got the email alert saying, all right, I go in and buy one. So I go to Newegg. They were out of stock. I'm like, oh, man.
Oh, too slow.
So I signed up for the alert again. A couple days later, just out of a whim, I go and check Newegg and say, hey, they're in stock. Awesome. So I went and bought one real quick. And this is $1,500. It's not cheap at all.
Oh, yeah.
And then I go and check my email to see if I got my order confirmation. And just then, the notification came in saying that they were available for purchase, quickly followed by my purchase order.
Well, good timing.
I click on the link going back to the site, and now they're out of stock.
Oh, well, you got one at least.
I got one.
And you got another one also.
Well, that's another story because the processor that I got in, I put in my MSI motherboard, which I will link that review down in the show notes. It didn't overclock very well. I mean, like at all. Like I could run the default memory, which was 2666. Anything faster than 3200 and the system would just die.
Interesting. That doesn't sound good for overclocking at all.
No. So I'd set the XMP with some crucial memory and it would supposed to go to 4,000, wouldn't work. Backed all that down to 3,200. That was the only way I could get it to boot, regardless of timing, regardless of voltage, whatever. And then I had like some PCI Express allocation errors. Bottom line, I think the processor was junk.
Just like a lemon? Is that what you're saying? A bad sample?
Yeah, bad sample. So I was working with AMD, trying to get the processor replaced. They kept quizzing me like, why are you trying to run your memory that fast? Why are you trying to run 4 video cards?
Because I can.
Yeah. And they are just basically troubleshooting the system, not believing that the processor was bad. And I'm like, if Newegg had them in stock, I would just get the processor replaced, but I'm stuck dealing with you guys. CES happened. I come back from CES. Turns out Newegg had stock of those processors again. I contacted them. This processor's bad. They went and cross-shipped me a new one, and then I got a new proc. Now I can overclock the memory, but the CPU doesn't overclock.
At all?
The Threadripper itself, it's a very large chip. It's very power hungry, and it is what you would call heat limited. So whenever they put enough voltage into it to make it run like 4.4 gigahertz, for instance, it would spike the core temperature up to 100 C and then shut down.
Oh, a heat bug instead of a cold bug.
Well, yeah. So basically it's heat limited. So much like a lot of the Intel CPUs, you have to keep them cold to make sure that they would clock. And the best way is to control the voltage against the frequency, against your cooling. I was running a heat killer water block in a full water loop. So I had some really good cooling. It just would spike at 100 C and then shut down. So I had to back it down. The best I could do was like 4.2 gigahertz with the new CPU, but I could overclock the memory up to 4,000 megahertz, but no more than that. So there was this arbitrary limit that was imposed on the Threadripper because of the heat problem. The gains from that is probably the most disappointing part, because if you run your memory at 4,000 megahertz, it's actually slower than if you run it at 3,600 megahertz.
Oh, no. What's the point then?
Exactly. And the only way that you can increase performance with Threadripper, much like the Ryzen's, there's only a couple cores that boost at any given time. So the best way to get more performance is to have all the cores boost at the same speed. If you go back to a previous podcast episode, I was pulling up benchmarks from Hot Hardware. You know, Marco was doing some reviews on this.
Oh, yeah.
And his overclocking scores, the frequency for those, was less than the boost frequency of the processor itself.
That just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, until I go and do the same thing, and I cannot get the thing to run at 4.4 gigahertz. I can get it to run at 4.2. It boosts to 4.4.
But you can't get it to run there consistently.
No, because...
Or at all? Oh, that's weird.
It'll run there until you put a load on it. Actually, I could get it to run at 4.6 with very little load. And then, of course, it would heat spike and then kill itself.
Again, what's the point?
Yeah. So that got me thinking. It's like, we have these really large chips, and they have such a power demand and such a cooling demand that overclocking them has become a bit of a challenge, one, because of cooling. And when you cannot get the performance out of it that you are expecting, especially when you consider a lower, smaller chip, it really becomes a, why am I overclocking this platform? Why do I spend extra money on this enthusiast level high-end platform when I can theoretically get better performance out of a much cheaper chip that is also a lot smaller that I wouldn't normally buy because it is inferior?
Well, I want to tie this back to this new Intel processor, though, because we were talking about, cores versus...
speed.
Speed, I guess. Yeah.
And speed against cores.
So based on that, the Threadripper is limited because you can't isolate it to the fastest cores. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that is correct. I pulled up a software package called Hardware Info, and there is a bar chart that goes and pulls up every core in the CPU and lets you know what the speed is. At the default, when you just kind of power it up, it will boost to 4.4 gigahertz. And at any given time, there are about six cores that will boost to 4.4. And they're migrating all throughout the chip.
That's really interesting.
So like, you know, core 10 will go to 4.4. And then after that, it goes down to 2.2. And then another core that might be core 8 will go 4.4. But at any given time, only like six of them are boosted. So that is how that is how AMD was handling the power problem, by still saying this is a 4.4 chip, but we're only boosting a few cores because that's the only way that we can keep the power envelope within reason and the heat, you know, be less than 280 watts.
So how does that contrast with the i9?
The i9, as the Tech Radar report says, all cores boost. So it's a lot like some of the anniversary edition processors where every core was running at 5 gigahertz. That gives you a much better performance because every core is able to process every thread that comes in as quickly as possible.
But isn't the trade-off there that you're getting more heat because we're boosting the entire processor?
Correct. And the 10900, that's what I'm going to call it, it only has 10 cores. That is considerably less than the Ryzen version that has 12. So ideally, we have, you know, if we do the math on it, it's going to produce less heat, even though it's running faster, because there's less cores to generate that heat. Much like the Core i9-9900K, it has 8 cores with hyper-threading. You can overclock that one to 7 gigahertz because of, again, liquid nitrogen and whatnot, but the package doesn't generate that much heat.
Let's talk just briefly about the power again, because if we're talking about a 300-watt power draw for this new processor, how does that compare with at least the Threadrippers? Because I know they have a reputation for being power hungry.
You know, I didn't measure it, but I did read that the Threadripper 3, the CPU itself pulls 350 watts. The TDP is 280. But once you enable all the cores, then that power envelope goes up considerably, almost 400.
Wow. Now, I know you're fresh off of your CES trip, but we did not hear anything about the new Intel processor. So what is your guess for when we could anticipate getting some more concrete information?
Oh, that is a very good question. You know, Intel didn't have a booth at CES.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Remember I had mentioned that in place of where Intel used to be, which was right off of that door in Central Hall, that's where Neon was, the artificial human.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And it is unusual for Intel to skip.
And so, I think Intel probably had like a hospitality suite somewhere, but they didn't have a booth per se. Or if they did, I had no idea where it was.
Well, and that might just be because they're in between, no longer a TikTok, but it's still fun to think of it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I did read somewhere that they are moving away from what they did, which was getting away from TikTok and going back to TikTok.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I think that cadence actually is a good thing for the market, especially with the competition now from Ryzen and Threadripper and what AMD is doing. Intel needs to be able to answer to that. And if their 10900K is technically faster than their flagship Ryzen CPU, that really votes well for what Intel can do with the new generation.
It's also exciting to think about some of the new functionality that comes with a new generation. I know there's been some new technologies on the market, faster USB, which we're starting to see, as we did on the X299X, 5G support, perhaps. That seems to be the hot new thing.
PCIe Gen 4, Intel is not putting those into their new chips yet. And I want to say that that is probably a support issue. There isn't a lot of other components out on the market that support PCI Express Gen 4, including video cards. There's that one AMD video card that does, but in terms of the performance benefits, it's probably too soon for them to invest into that. And that kind of goes along with what AMD was talking about at Computex, how they were always the first to do something. So they were the first to have a multi-core CPU. They were the first to have 64-bit extensions. And that was really them experimenting, but then pushing Intel to go and answer the call, so to speak.
Well, yeah, when you're not the fastest car on the road, a little innovation doesn't hurt, right?
Exactly.
Get that bigger fin on the back, some wider tires, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Something, at least, to differentiate yourself from the Intel. And AMD, for a long time, has been pretty content to not go for the performance crowd.
Yeah, and if the AMD fanboys are any indication of what has been happening with the new Ryzen CPUs, we have a winner here. We have some people that are really looking for something that's not Intel to build their rigs. And as we proved in a previous podcast episode, the builds that you can do with Ryzen are about the same price as that you could do with Intel and get the same performance.
Well, I think that's an interesting segue. If we were to pull out our crystal balls and anticipate this new i9 processor, what would you think would be the kind of build? What kind of memory are we looking for? What kind of video cards are we looking at? M2, I mean, what's a build on that look like if you were to take your best guess?
The builds, believe it or not, they're not going to be any different than what we would recommend now. Because, and I say this because, the 10 series Intels, the LGA 2066s, fit in the X299 motherboards. They're basically a processor refresh.
Oh, okay.
But there wasn't any new technology warranting a new chipset. So basically, they just did a BIOS flash on the existing boards. The new ones that are coming out have much larger VRMs, like the WaterForce Extreme that we talked about.
Right.
That gives you a nice platform for these much faster, higher core CPUs. But the underlying technology, like we still have quad channel DDR4 memory, we still have PCI Express 3 video card support, we still have our M.2 drives, although a lot of these new motherboards have a much better layout for M.2 drives. Like our WaterForce Extreme has the two drives in between the slot 1 and slot 4 for your PCI Express. And then there's two drives right there. Gives you a convenient spot to put a nice big heatsink to keep those drives cool. So the layouts are really what has changed with the new refresh motherboards.
Well, I think the manufacturers have shown some maturity in their designs too, as we've learned how to more optimally lay these things out. Mm-hmm. Better power support, as we mentioned in our X299X conversation in the main podcast this month. So check that out if you haven't gotten to it already.
Yeah, the one thing that is really the disappointment is we have all this power, but NVIDIA has limited us to two video cards. And that has also changed the way that motherboards are laid out. So we can't actually run four AMD video cards on this new platform because they took away all of our PCI Express slots, adding M.2 drives and stuff like that.
Well, it does make me wonder if we'll see a resurgence of the two GPUs on a single card type designs that we saw for quite a while back in the day.
In terms of the way SLI was, right, there was the biggest gain was at two cards, a slight gain at three cards, and really not much gain at four cards. Four cards was really just showing off. So really, NVIDIA is doing the min-max of the performance world.
Right.
So we can focus on having the performance of two cards with the assumption that people are probably only going to run one.
So let's bottom line it. How do you feel today about Threadripper? And what would you say about this new 10900X Comet Lake S?
Comet Lake S.
Is it worth the wait? Is the Ryzen worth an investment? Are you still a hardcore i9-900 or 9000 series fan?
I will come out and say that Threadripper 3, a complete and total waste of money.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm saddened to say it because the motherboards that came out, the TRX 40s, awesome boards. The way that, for instance, ours had a backplate, they had big, massive heat sinks, they had large VRM, the layout was perfect. It was a really compact, well-designed motherboard that translated with MSI as well. And one of the best boards that I've used so far is the Strix from ASUS. It has one less PCI Express slot on it, but it has a lot more features like the OLED displays and much more robust RGB support, better memory support. But in terms of overclocking for the enthusiast, in terms of cost, in terms of what you can get out of it, it's a total waste. You might as well skip Threadripper, go to a Ryzen, that would be the next best thing, and see what you can do there. I mean, we have seen memory records set with the Ryzen, what was it, the 9300X or something like that, one of the low-end ones. It seems to be where the enthusiast would be happy if you are really focusing on overclocking.
So let's talk sweet spot, because we still can only speculate about this new i9. Mm-hmm. But today, if you were to recommend best bang for your buck processor, all-around performer without breaking your bank too much, just to keep me happy. Mm-hmm. I know we used to recommend the 6600 back in the day, but where are we at this year, beginning of 2020? What's the sweet spot for a processor today, you think?
I am a fan of the X299 stuff. I like the high-end desktop aspect of the platform. I like the quad-channel memory support. You get a lot of performance out of it. You get enough overclocking to keep the enthusiast happy. But with Core i9-9800Ks, almost matching that performance with a much lower price point, it's kind of a toss-up. As an enthusiast, I would say draw the line at spending $1,000 on a CPU. And I'm going to say the 10900K is probably going to be right around that point.
But something in that neighborhood, I think you're right. You're going to get a tremendous core build with a lot of legs and a great amount of performance without the heat issues of your AMD processor and enough performance to do what you need today. A good recommend. Thank you.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been an Engineering Production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.